For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, returning with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. Ably assisted once again via the power of the internet is Mr. Dave Anderson alongside me. Welcome, Dave.
Good afternoon.
Was it good afternoon, Dave? I believe you've been busy.
Yeah, I've been on the golf course. I've been on the golf course every day this week, truth be told. I'm not going to hide that.
And how is the golf? Have you been very, very busy?
It's been better than expected, I'd have to say, but I don't have high levels in the golf. No, it's been okay. It's been good to see all the guys again. And listen, the weather's been good, and I'm sure everybody's pleased just to be outside. And if you play golf, then it's good. But there's been other stuff going on I can't talk about, and I hope someday I can, and it's to do with football. And you are aware because I've filled you in on it. But my goodness gracious me, I wish I could sit down and tell the punters this one. I really do. It's been, I can't say. I should have maybe even said this, but I promise you one day I'll do my best to tell you. But it's a roller coaster ride, the world of football at times, let me tell you.
And that autobiography, he's trying to sell it already. He hasn't even written it yet.
Yeah, and I've only had one Peroni, but I am going to have a beer as we record.
I have to reveal, I didn't start the tape rolling early enough to hear Dave's opening of a Peroni. It worked very, very well. And if Peroni are listening, we're happy and open to sponsorship on that. It's going to be a slightly different show this week because of, there's just so much to discuss that everything almost sort of broke on Friday after we'd done the show last week. We've got a guest to come up later as well, but I spoke to David Richardson, the senior writer at Non-League Paper, earlier on, and just did a bit of a roundup from their perspective and what they're going to be talking about over the weekend. David Richardson, welcome back.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. You know, we're at Easter, and it's not the usual bumper weekend of football that Easter usually brings about. But, boy, what a week of news. I suppose news, views and rumours. That's probably the best explanation of it. Since we last spoke, we've had the expunging of Dover's results in the National League, and that's had a bit of an impact on the table.
Yeah, that's right. Obviously, Dover's record has been removed for this season, so the points that they gained, but also the points that other clubs took off them, and no more. So there was a little bit of a shuffling around the table last week as some teams lost points, and that was obviously a benefit to some others, like Notts County, who had lost today on the very first weekend of the season back in October. So yeah, that happened. Obviously, Dover were fined £40,000 and also have a 12-point deduction for the start of next season. And that was sort of coupled with the fines with teams at Step 2 for the non-fulfillment of fixtures during that time when clubs were in limbo, really, as to whether the funding was going to come, whether the season was going to be knocked on the head as it then was. And some clubs, also didn't feel sort of safe at that time when, the pandemic was sort of at its worst. And those clubs felt the sort of repercussions of missing those fixtures by the view of an independent panel that had been appointed by the National League to decide on these charges.
Yeah, as you said, plenty of people unhappy with everything, that all the fallout from last Friday. One of those that was unhappy, which you covered in last week's paper, was the Dover chairman himself, making it clear that that he thought the fine was too hefty and things like that. Any more repercussions from the Dover situation there?
But they're currently weighing up what their next steps are in terms of sort of responding to those punishments as to, whether they'll pay the fine and what will happen going forward. I must say I was sort of surprised last week seeing that those fines were imposed. But then at the same time, the other side of it, there will have been clubs who continued with fixtures, the majority of clubs continued with fixtures at Step 1, but also clubs at Step 2 did the same as well, and they will say, well, we were fielding players and having to pay those players to play games, so, you know, but when other clubs weren't doing so, they were effectively saving money. One of Dover's arguments from Jim Palmer was that, well, they didn't have any money to spend, so they weren't losing out on, you know, they weren't saving money because they didn't have the money to spend.
Yeah.
So I can see it from both points of view from that.
And I think it's important that we show both points of view as well, because you know, we do live in a world where if you shout loudest, you sometimes get a lot more attention. And it's a difficult one because we do, you know, my legal background, rules are important to me. We do have rules. I'm not saying that they were necessarily applied. It doesn't all make sense, put it that way. Some of the fines when clubs are saying that they couldn't play their games because they didn't have enough money, it does seem a bit strange to then punish them with financial fines and you know, suspend the points but not suspend the fines. It's and you're never going to please everybody all of the time. But we got to the stage where non-league seem to be embracing itself and looking after one another, and now we seem to be maybe heading towards another implosion, because there's suggestions again this week that some of those clubs that were hit with fines are now threatening an EGM and a vote of no confidence in the board. As far as I'm aware, there's nothing officially come about from that, but any more insight from yourself?
Yeah, so Maidstone and Dorking have put forward this sort of request really for a vote of no confidence in the National League Board and its chairman, to which all member clubs of the National League, you know, can be a part of that, to try and force through some sort of change. They had set a deadline for Wednesday, as in March 31st for clubs to respond. They've extended that until Monday, just to allow clubs sort of a little bit more time to discuss things, you know, amongst their own boards as to whether to decide to support it. I'm not quite clear at the moment what then, if the vote of no confidence would go through, what then follows.
Yeah, it then becomes another legal issue again, doesn't it? And we need the legal eagles on it and how the rules work. And in circumstances such as this, I always, you know, I'm always wary and always like to warn people that it's fine trying to get rid of the people that are already there, but you need somebody in there to carry on. I've seen many a coup in a non-league boardroom over the years, and then clubs find that they've actually only got one or two people left within the board, which isn't a core number to do anything, and sometimes the position isn't an easy one to take forward.
Yeah, that's right, and I'm sure these things will be being discussed behind the scenes amongst clubs and the people involved, so we'll see how that pans out. And I think probably the sort of the first stage maybe is, you know, trying to get rid of the current National League board. You know, clearly these clubs are very upset with the way things have been handled in the last 12 months. I think at one point or another, most clubs have had some sort of issue with the way things have happened, whether that be the funding between October and December, the way the season came to an end at step two, with the vote. So, you know, there's a lot of sort of angry and upset people out there, really. And I think Maidstone and Dorking at this stage, you know, I try to sort of force through change for what they hope will be a better future.
And we've also had Dorking Wanderers, they publicly set out their, I think, preliminary written representations against the National League, which in some sort of quasi-legal format. I'm not sure if it constitutes a legal document that they've sent to the National League. That's not quite clear. But I think they're... I'm not sure that it's their argument. It's how their feelings have made fairly clear there, and you can see and you understand why people are frustrated and that. But we do need to draw everybody back to the conclusion that we need to work to a set of rules, and there needs to be an understanding of those rules. And one of those is indeed who was on the independent panel that decided all these things, because independent panels. Are great normally if you know that they are independent, and if you don't know who they are, then it's a bit more difficult to understand their independence. And I believe
the people who were on that National League independent panel was former head of football administration at the FA, Graham Noakes, and a couple of FA judicial panel members, Peter Barnes and Alan Hardy, were three who were on that independent panel that heard those National League charges. But yes, I mean, that has largely sort of been in private, really.
Yeah, and I can hear people already whispering in my ear that these are probably people that have sat on the same boards over the years with everybody that's on the National League boards. And it's always difficult, isn't it? You find a jury of 12 of your peers, and there's always someone that may have been have a connection or a knowledge of you. But I think what we tried to get the National League to come on again and speak to us, but I think there are so many loose ends up in the air that they're in a position where they're not entirely sure as to what the next steps are going to be taken for them to respond to.
Yeah, so I think probably in the National League feel that what can they say when clubs are sort of rallying together for a vote of no confidence in the board, really. And of course they would be having an EGM anyway, as a conclusion of their season, I think. So this would be raised once the clubs have sort of putting it out there themselves, really, and getting that support together. But yeah, again, it's certainly sort of, whether you agree or disagree with anything that's gone on in the last 12 months, certainly all of this is not a good look for non-league or indeed the National League.
No, it doesn't look good when particularly the spotlight is back on, I guess, grassroots football more with the return to organised football by Step 3 clubs and below. I know a number of clubs have got back to training already. So there's a sense in the air that non-league's moving towards a full return, but these public arguments aren't going to help the profile at all.
Yeah, that's right. Obviously, there was quite a big push this week, wasn't there, from Monday when grassroots could return, and like you say, in turn, step three to six return in terms of training. Obviously, fans aren't allowed into games at the moment. Yeah, that looks like it'll only be from the middle of May, judging by sort of current government guidelines, although, as we sort of always hear, discussions are ongoing between the FA and the government. There's been sort of a couple of suggestions that some clubs are sort of back in training, having said that they didn't want to finish the season. I'm not too sure how many of those suggestions are true, or indeed sort of whether those clubs are involved. It may just well be the usual sort of rumours that you hear, but things will be coming back, fingers crossed, later this season, but it's still a long old way until August.
Yeah, and on a similar note, the rumour mill, as I sort of suggested earlier on, there's been limited fact, I think, at the moment that we can actually pinpoint and say this is definite, this has happened, apart from the fact that fines have been handed out in the National League. Some clubs are upset, and something will come of it. And like you say, there will be an EGM, because there'll have to be an EGM anyway, because there's lots of loose ends that has to be tied up before the end of the season and the AGM. One of the other facts that came out this week was obviously intermediary fees, which always come out this time of year. The FA publish, you know, how much has been paid to agents by various clubs. And again, there are a number of clubs within the National League that were featured there, and more rumours suggesting that, you know, the clubs that have said that they were struggling financially have been paying agents' fees. But it's a difficult one, agents' fees, because in many cases, agents are an important part of the game now.
Yeah, always interesting when that list comes out from the FA. Notts County and Stockport leading the way. Notts County was £58,000, Stockport £46,000. South Shields step three, spending almost £2,500 on them. It is something, you know, that has become part and parcel of the game, players having agents. There's always a lot of talk whether players at steps three and four and even below need these people involved. I think probably most managers you'll speak to would rather not have to deal with agents and not go through that process. But as we know, to a certain extent, they're there to try and help the player, to try and negotiate contracts and try and get the sort of the best deals for their players. Because, you know, if you're a young player, you might not know how much you might sort of be earning for my services playing at a certain level. I don't know. Is it a necessary evil? Is that the right phrase?
Possibly. Sure. I think the big thing is that the people don't necessarily understand the role of an agent or what an agent does or why they get paid and that sort of thing. And that's something that hopefully we'll be able to shed some light on next week with something that we got planned there. But it fuels the rumour mill, doesn't it, at non-league level, when there's, what was it, £271,000 going out of the non-league game to intermediaries, as they're now recognised as, particularly when clubs are asking for more funding from the government, I suppose it doesn't help the argument on that front. But plenty to be reported on this weekend then, David, even without so much football. What else can we expect to read in this weekend's non-league paper?
Yeah, all of the National League games as usual. As we head into the Easter weekend, you mentioned earlier to me how perhaps we come up to the Easter weekend in a normal season, and it's sort of the crunch time really where you can very quickly sort of pick up a couple of wins, and it sets you up nicely for the final four or five games. And it's always sort of seen as a pivotal weekend. Obviously, not quite the same now. But again, you know, there's some really sort of tasty games over this weekend. And we'll have all of the action from Friday's matches, and a little look ahead to what's coming up on Monday as well. But we've got the reaction from the trophy last weekend. Obviously, Hereford and Hornchurch having really good wins over Woking and Notts County in the semi-finals. And we hear from both clubs on those historic weekends for them. I spoke to Ben Goodliffe and Jason Goodliffe, who are father and son at Sutton United. Jason Goodliffe, obviously the former Stevenage and Hayes and AFC Wimbledon centre-back, obviously now the assistant there at Sutton, and his son Ben, who's only 21 but fast becoming one of the best defenders outside of the Football League, and of course Sutton flying high at the top of the National League. So we had a little chat about there about sort of how the father and son dynamic works in a National League dressing room, and that was really interesting. Also spoke to Andy Woodman, the new Bromley manager. He has a sort of a great pedigree in football, having worked in the Premier League for many years. He's just left his position as head of goalkeeping at Arsenal to join Bromley. Parted ways with Neil Smith last week, so I spoke to him. as well. And yeah, there's plenty of other bits in there to look forward to as usual from all over the pyramid. There's lots going on at all levels and plenty to read up on.
A great reason to get up. If chocolate in your Easter Sunday plans was already there, make sure that it's accompanied by a cuppa and the non-league paper. David, thanks for joining us once again, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Cheers, Tim. Thank you.
I wanted to pick your brains on it all as well, Dave, because I guess the first up, it was the news that broke at the end of last week, as I said, after our show, that National League independent panel that Mark Ives had spoken to us about, they reached their conclusion on the club's charge with failing to fulfil their fixtures earlier this year. And it does appear in each and every case that all of those clubs have now been fined a hefty sum, with a suspension of various points deductions being carried over to next season, but they've still got to pay that money. Now, we had hoped to get Mark Ives on the show back this week, but operational reasons, it's not possible in time for today's show, but we're in dialogue and we will have him back on, because there's plenty of stuff that he needs to answer. Or the league needs to answer, because there's so many unfinished businesses here.
Listen, you know, am I mistaken when I think that when these clubs were given they were told they were in breach a while ago and said that they could be fined and points, and then it was stated that this isn't what was going to happen, but they had to issue it because that was the rules of the league as it stated. Is that right or not?
Yeah, that's what Mark Ives, I think, told us on the show, that it was, you know, there was a mechanism that had to be gone through. And a point I raised earlier was that I understand, as with my league lawyer background, the hat on, whatever, I understand that, yes, rules were breached, there needs to be a process. But these clubs didn't play these games, either for a health and safety thing, which if you're fining people for not turning up for health and safety, I mean, any employer would tell you that's a can of worms you're just opening yourself up to. But if the other reason that they'd put forward was that they couldn't afford to play these games, to then fine them for not playing those games when you've also cut short their season so that they can't now bring in any revenue, or, you know, sponsorships will be curtailed. I'm sure there won't be as much going on at these football clubs. It just seems about face. It doesn't seem to make sense.
I didn't think I'd use this for a while again. It sounds so typical FA and so typical league board, where the left hand doesn't know what the right... Well, the left hand tells you this is what's going to happen, but actually the right hand delivers something totally different. What I would say about it is, yes, I understand that there's rules and regulations. You know, I think we all understand that. And in normal circumstances, they should be upheld. But you can't put normal rules and regulations in place in the situation that we are. Let's put the sort of COVID bit to say that the whole country suffered. Let's just talk about football here. They can't play the games because of COVID, because of the health issues around it. We've had the famous, where's the minutes of the meeting where you had the agreement? So there is no funding to allow them to play it without people coming in the gate and sort of paying their fee into the ground and buying a couple of beers and a burger, which keeps, as we know, all non-league sides running. So are you telling me that hasn't even been taken into account?
Well, I think the difficulty as well is that we, particularly as clubs, you know, you mentioned the minute situation there, we're asking for honesty and integrity. That's the word that's being bandied around, integrity. Now, in all honesty, these clubs could have said, sorry, we can't field a team because we've got COVID, because they weren't being tested. There was no official testing going on there, it was up to the clubs to be doing that themselves. So they could have quite easily have said, sorry, we've got COVID in the camp, we can't field a team. And then they probably wouldn't have been fined, because in previous examples of that earlier on in the season, the fixture just got moved and they got played at a later date.
Yeah, but the league actually saying that they're being fined, the clubs are being fined, and there's talk of dock points and stuff, simply because they haven't upheld the rules and regulations and performance of the league on normal circumstances. Is that what we're being told?
I think the rules say a reasonable, they clearly didn't put forward a reasonable excuse. Now, this was to the independent panel. I've already discussed this with David Richardson, who mentioned a couple of people that were on the independent panel. And I also mentioned the fact that these are, yes, experienced people in FA decisions, you know, these panels, but from the people that are already upset with the FA decisions and the panels that are being made, to then say that, yes, don't worry, your decision is now being made by an independent panel made up of the same people that we've sat on panels with for the last 30 years, not particularly an independent panel. Now, I know you've got golf courses to wander, Mr. Anderson, but you know, maybe people like yourself who's got experience of the impact of these sort of decisions. You know, so if these are £10,000 fines, that's a big impact to a club, because it's a football debt. So it has to be paid. There's no way of getting around it. So what we're now left with is football beginning to tear itself apart, where you've got Dorking Wanderers and Mason United are trying to pull together other clubs to do to make sure that there's an EGM, and there's a call for a vote of no confidence in the National League board there. So, which I understand where they're coming from. Now, again, there's a lot of bluff and bluster across from both sides, because there will be an EGM anyway.
Yeah, let me ask you a question. Why did it have to be an independent panel?
I think the idea behind the independent panel was that it then wouldn't create so much fuss when the decision came out. But it's
no. All I'm saying is, why can't they deal with it themselves? You know, I think getting an independent panel is passing the buck. That's like me saying my team get beat 4-0. I didn't pick a team. I let a couple of other people pick it. You know, because why do we need an independent panel for this? Surely the league board, or whoever sits to make these decisions, is more than aware of the situation that everyone's in. I'm not on a league board. I don't manage a football club, but I'm aware of it. So surely these people are aware of it, but they make the choice to get an independent panel. It's not as if they've sat, made their decision, put it to the clubs, and the clubs go, we're not happy, could we have an independent panel? They've effectively passed the buck from minute one. Am I wrong in saying that?
No, I think you're completely right. And what the position they've now got is that they've appointed an independent panel that have come back with a decision, and the clubs have now said, well, that's ludicrous. Now we don't even want you in, you know, even to be able to make these decisions, to appoint an independent panel.
Well, listen, to be perfectly honest, I absolutely understand why they would do that. I'd be going, what? So you haven't made a decision. You've passed it to some people who don't know, who aren't of the same knowledge as you are, as the league committee or board or whatever it is. But you've passed it outside without even trying to attempt it. I would be going, well, why don't we just get the independent panel to run the league?
Well, maybe this is the way forward. Maybe this is what's going to happen. The guys that are trying to rally their clubs to maybe call this EGM and the vote of no confidence. Originally, there was the midday deadline of Wednesday this week, but that's been rolled to Monday to give. I think chairmen want to have a conversation first with each other to see what the implications of this are. And yeah, I've seen it, and you've seen it, I'm sure, at boards within clubs where boards fall out, and then there's almost a similar sort of thing at club level of a vote of no confidence, and then you lose one director, he takes his three mates with him, and you're left with a football club that's hanging on by its fingernails. And there's always further implications, as seems to be our regular mantra on this show, is that there's always other things that fall from this. But I perfectly understand where they're coming from, and there needs to be an end point as well.
Yes. But do you know the one thing that jumps out at me all the time when we get in positions like this is, boom, it's banging me in the head now. Common sense. Where's common sense with this? Where's the common sense that the board need to source it to an independent panel? Where's the common sense that they need to apply the rules as they're sitting at the moment instead of having an emergency meeting, because we're in a unprecedented position in the world, never mind in football? Where's the common sense? Where's the guy that went, hang on, what are you talking about? Source it out so they can find people. What about what's happening? What about how these clubs have to deal with this? Now, don't get me wrong. You know, I've my own thoughts. You know, I'll share it with you. Dover, I think, are you really that bad? Have you really jumped that early, Jim? You know, is that really what it is? Now, I haven't got one inkling of evidence to say that he's not being upfront and honest. My gut instinct goes, well, you jumped a bit early. But the bottom line is, it's nothing compared to this. You know, how can you find, there's people been fined in the north and south as well, isn't there?
Yep. So
who have had their league stopped?
Well, I think that's one of the biggest ironies, is that they can't play the games that they didn't play. So they didn't turn up for a fixture that actually they're being fined for a game that won't take place anyway. if they had played that game, remember, the season's been null and voided. So if they turned up to that match, it wouldn't have been worthwhile anyway, because it's been null and voided since.
But they'd have spent money to do it. They'd have taken their health and the people around them's health into it, because it's that scenario. But listen, just, I know you've tried to word this statement well and you're an intelligent man, but you can't even get the words to put it into a proper sentence, can you? It's just nonsense. Where is common sense in this?
I did a piece in the non-league paper a few weeks back, and I made reference to a question of sport and the song on there for the mystery guest round, which was there's more questions than answers. And every week, everything that the National League attempt to do just creates more questions than answers.
It does, and I've tried to. Listen, the only thing I ever try and be is honest. The only thing I ever try and be is, as I get older, I suppose I get to see the other side of the coin more. And I've spoke to these guys, you know, we've had Mark on, and Mark Ives has been brilliant. But I will say, you know, Mark, you've dodged us this week, and we'll accept it once. You know, but if you're going to be the spokesman, be the spokesman. And you can't sort of stay away this week because this is going to be a difficult week. And to be fair to Mark, he doesn't seem like that sort of guy. He seems like a guy who will come on and tell you what it is. So if he's having his strings pulled by someone else, then shame on them. Get out, speak to us. So otherwise, we're just going to get up a storm like we are, because I just look at it and go, common sense in this. Now, we're at a loss for words. I'm at a loss for words that they've fined people and deducted them points. The Dover one is the one that sits with me, where I would need more convincing. The Dover were true to form. I don't know how to word it, but and I've no evidence before Jim gets on the phone. I've no evidence. Just gut reaction that they went early. Everybody else, I'm going, Well, in all honesty, what's happened now is the integrity of the whole division has absolutely gone.
And the thing that I think we've raised, you know, almost every week for the last couple of months is we need the EFL to embrace the National League to make sure that there's promotion from this division this year that now hasn't got any relegation and has now got clubs looking at calling the board into disrepute and looking to replace them.
Yeah, and instead of me saying, you know, and I mean this honestly, instead of me saying, well, they're out of order, the clubs really, and they'd have a look at themselves, I'm going, you know, I'm finding it hard to defend the league board. It was the league board that sat and made this, isn't it? So I'm struggling to get them a defence. I really am. To pass it, yeah,
Who'd have thought that Dave Anderson would be speechless and also be the campaigner for common sense?
I'm not saying I've got any. I'm just saying they should have.
So I do feel at the moment that we struggle to bring you the non-league stories that bring a smile to your face that we've always enjoyed. Well, this week I couldn't fail to follow up with one that did make me smile. I may be a Spurs fan, away from my non-league passions, but our next guest still has a special place in my heart. From banter as a player, through chats behind dugouts and interviews on this show, to coaching at the highest level of football, and he still replies to texts when he's there. It was with a wry smile that I read that he was returning to non-league. So it's a pleasure to welcome back to the non-league football show returning manager at Heybridge Swifts, Mr. Julian Dix.
Good evening.
It's a good evening for us because we've got you back on the show, Julian. And sorry if that intro sort of dented your hard man image. You've worked for decades sort of building that up. But we like to celebrate on this show people who love football and love football at our level. And I know since leaving West Brom, you've been in contact with me, you've been in contact with Dave, everybody across the non-league scene, because you just wanted to get back involved. So I guess you had a big smile on your face when you were able to go back to Heybridge.
Yeah, listen, obviously I've been there before, as people know. Got a bit of unfinished business there. But it's a good club. It's run by proper people. Like Gary White, the chairman, Steve Spreadbury, the vice chairman. They run the club properly, but they let me get on with my job, which is picking the team and hopefully winning games.
And just to see, you know, I was thinking about it today because we knew we got you on, and you've done something that I don't think any human has done, which is basically you went from Grays to West Ham. So you went non-league, Premier League. Then you went West Ham to Heybridge, back in the non-league. Then you went West Brom Premier League back. So you've done like the massive like mountain and back again. Tell me about two or three of the things that would be similar and two or three of the things that are like miles apart.
Well, similar, obviously, like from my point of view, is training sessions. My training sessions have to be intense. Again, the boys only train for an hour and a half. In non-league and at pro level, they only train for an hour and a half, so maybe 2 hours at pro level, but it has to be intense. And some things that are different, obviously money, the lifestyle, and obviously ability. You know, no disrespect to the boys at non-league level, but obviously Premiership players and Championship players, obviously there's a class. But there's some good players in non-league. I mean, very good players in non-league. But the thing I like about non-league is there's a rawness, there's commitment, because, listen, whatever people say, they train Tuesday and Thursdays, they work all week, they train Tuesday and Thursdays, and they turn up to a game on Saturday. So they do it because they want to do it. So, I mean, that kind of appeals to me. And like I said, when I was at Heybridge before, the boys were magnificent. They turn up because I would say to them, the only time you miss training is if you have to work. That's it. There's no other excuse. If you have to work, I understand that, because it pays your bills, pays your mortgage. I said, but if you lie to me, I will find out. So, but no, they were superb, and that's what I like about non-league football. It's like the rawness, the commitment, and the aggressiveness as well.
Yeah, and obviously the levels. Yeah, like no one's disputing that there's different levels, and you're fortunate that you've played at the very top level, so you can deal with that. And but how do you adapt to that? So all of a sudden you've been like in the Premiership dealing with people, and then you drop down to our level. You have to adjust what you do, why you do it, where you do it, that sort of stuff, Dixie. Do you know what I mean?
I do, but I treat them I try and treat them exactly the same as I would when I was at West Ham or West Brom. Like I said, the training's the same. My training sessions would be exactly the same from Heybridge to West Ham to West Brom. Because in the day, if they can't pass the ball, then they shouldn't be playing football. And if they can't head the ball, they shouldn't be playing football. So it is just basic stuff that you're asking them to do. Listen, they're decent players because they're at that club. You know what I mean? Like the boys I had at Heybridge, they're good players because they were there. And like I said, they were fantastic. I mean, they could all obviously pass the ball, whether it's 5 yards, 10 yards. Some people can ping ball 60, 70 yards. And if you can do that, great. If you can't, give it to somebody that can. So the thing is, listen, football's simple. Football's a simple game. The people that make it complicated are managers and coaches. But again, I try and keep it as simple as possible.
Yeah, it's good. And sort of obviously falling back in now to where you are, into which we call it proper football, you know. But so staff would be good, well, be essential to you now, Dixie, because with the greatest respect, you've had all your eyes around the Premiership. You're now dropping down to non-league. So is staff important to you now for a knowledge of the player base at the moment?
Well, I've got Carl Duguid, who was there when I was there before. So Carl's there. And James Good, the goalkeeping coach, is still there. So he's staying. And Bevo, who is a physio, and he's staying. So it's the same people that are going to be there that I've gotten very well with and that I trust, because you need people that you can trust in any level of football. You need people that you can trust.
And I understand that you take the manager's coat. Is it on the 1st of July? It probably won't be a manager's coat by the 1st of July. Probably be in his shorts and T-shirt. But is that a contractual thing, or is that just where we are with this football season?
No, that's when my pre-season will start. And that's when that's on the Thursday. So that's when it will start.
And we've got, you know, football going back at the moment this week. You know, a number of clubs that have gone back to pre-season training early doors. Are you concerned about the players that you're going to be able to bring into that squad where the season starts, 14th of August, getting their fitness levels up to the right level that you're going to want?
No, because my training would do that. Like I said, when I went in before, the boys weren't as fit as they should have been. But my training sessions, like I said, there's only for an hour and a half. The longest it will go on for is 5 minutes, spells. But I expect it to be intense. And if it's not intense, then I tell them. So, and in the end, they do come in and they work their socks off. They work their socks off.
Well, it sounds like if there's any non-league players out there that fancy a challenge, they certainly could go a lot worse than coming to one of your sessions and learning what it's like to be a footballer.
Yeah, like I said today, my training sessions be exactly the same as I've done at West Ham and I've done at West Brom. They're very intense. A lot of it is like keep balls in ball possessions in stuff like that. So they are very intense. But like I said, the longest they go on for is 5 minutes. And it might not seem a long time, but if I'm expecting you to run for 5 minutes nonstop, it is physical. It is demanding. And I know people probably go, yeah, 5 minutes, I can do that. But it is physically demanding.
Yeah, you mentioned the unfinished business. That 18-19 season, you won the playoffs, but without the promotion, because it was that season where only four out of the eight playoff winners went up, and it was based on the points per game of the season that had gone previous. You were the informed team. You did everything right, and then you ended up being the fifth place. And I know I remember swapping messages with you. it was a hard time.
It was a nonsense, wasn't it? It was absolute nonsense. It was
ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. I remember at the time, Dixie, thinking, well, I can't swear on the radio, but I was, you went, how have you come to this? How have you actually got to this, you know?
But they must have sat there and gone, yeah, this is a good idea. They must have sat there.
We're just talking about what's going on now, which you've just come back. You don't need to get involved in it. But let me tell you, they haven't changed much.
But no, it was. I mean, like I said, the boys in the semi-final against Avery were magnificent. In the final against Maldon, they were superb. And the extra time and the penalties. And to not go up, it was heartbreaking, to be fair. You know what I mean? They worked so hard. Because when I took over, they were 15th. We done really, really well to get in the playoffs. At once, we were second in the table. But listen, we got in the playoffs. And to do that against Avery, we were a very good side. Played both teams away. So, you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, you can't go up. But they say, well, yeah, but you knew that in the beginning. But still don't make it right. Still don't make it right.
It's absolutely nonsense. Yeah. And just going into it this time, Julian, you know, obviously, you're an ambitious guy as a manager, but see how it goes. What have you spoke to the board about? What's the role? What's the expectations, probably better?
Well, listen, I think for any manager, the expectations are you want to win the league or you want to get in the playoffs and you want to go up, you want good cup runs, you want to win the cup. For me, I want to win every game. You know what I mean? I know it's impossible, but I want to win every game. And that's the mentality I put into the players. Whether it's a keep ball, whether it's a five-a-side, it's about winning. And I know people now go, oh, yeah, it's about being competitive. For me, that's rubbish. It's about winning football games. And there's some games that you play poorly and you win. And there's some games you think, I don't know how we lost that. But it's football. It swings in roundabouts. So you have to take the good with the bad. There's a lot more bad than there is good in football. but it is... Like I said, Gary and Steve, they let me get on with my job. They run the club really, really well. They look after the players, which for a football player, that's all you want. Yeah. So you come in Saturday or training, everything's there. Listen, they come in Tuesday, everything's set up for them. Everything's clean, all the bibs, everything's done for them. So again, like I said, we try and keep it as professional as we can and treat them like it.
Yeah, and hopefully that brings in the right people too. Now, away from this show, I try and make stuff on film as well as audio and that, and I'm always interested in potential Hollywood blockbusters set in non-league. Now, I think you've even made a cameo appearance in one film, haven't you? In the past, did I?
I was in the football.
Some show, but the real Terminator. It's got a ring to it. Is the Julian Dick story ever going to make it onto film?
I wouldn't have thought so.
be an X certificate.
But the things that, as Dave's already touched on there, where you've gone from the non-league up into the highest echelons, do you manage the Principality of Sealand as well? That makes international management.
Well,
isn't it?
I went to a tournament with them and managed them in a tournament.
Yeah, it's international management as well. Yeah, yeah. As a player, you know, in England being under 21, you've achieved so much. That is that one of the reasons why you love coming back to non-league, so you can sort of impart that information and that knowledge, or is it just that you just love football?
I do. I love, the thing is, I miss playing football every single day. I miss playing Upton Park every single day. I think about it, and this is 20-odd years ago now, but I still think about playing and playing at Upton Park. But I do. I like to talk to people about football. You know what I mean? I walk my daughter around where I live, and like people stop me and just talk about football, and I'll stop and I'll chat to them about football. You know what I mean? Like, it's obviously West Ham fans around here, so they chat about West Ham. But it's like I love football. I love coaching. Don't get me wrong; it's frustrating at times, and you want to beat people up. You want to do this. You want to do that. But I do. I love it. I love it.
I think to be fair, I can vouch for that because, you know, to be fair to Dixie, any time that he's been out of work, he's always spoke to us about getting back in. It was never where, how much. It was just about getting in the just getting into football. And you know, and I always used to sit back and go, you know, recognised name, unbelievable career, sort of icon at West Ham, it would have to be said. But unless you sort of spoke to him on a one-to-one level like we have, you can't believe it. I never loved football like Julian Dix does. You know, I've never wanted to be in it as much as he wants to be. And you sort of sit back and you understand why the success he did it. But that's you, Dixie. You've always been like that, haven't you?
Yeah.
Over the time I've known you anyway. Yeah. You just have all... It's never been about, I need this much. I'm not doing it unless you pay me this much. Yeah. Or I'm not doing it unless it's this level. Or, well, you proved that when you went to the West Ham ladies. Mm-hmm. You know, that you it didn't matter to you. You just love the game, don't you?
Yeah, I do. And like I said, I love coaching people. And I love people progressing. And for me, like I spoke to a few players today and they go, well, I want to play higher. I said, look, I said, that depends on you. So you have, every training session, every game, you have to work as hard as you can. And you have to, every game, you have to play well or reasonably well. I said, I have many contacts in the game. I said, if someone comes in for you, they're higher. I said, I'm not going to stand in your way because that's what players want to do. They want to play as high as they can. Whether that's just the next level up or whether that's the football league, listen, I'm all for players playing as high as they can. And when you say that to players, they go, oh, because they think that I say to them, listen, I want to keep my best players. Of course I do. I want to win the league. I want to win the cup. But if it's a case of you progressing to play at the highest level that you can, I'm all for that. I'm all for that. But unfortunately, there's a lot of managers that stop that.
Yeah, I mean, in my business dealings, one of my a guy that's no longer with us used to talk about the relationship of trust. And in business, it's so important that whoever you're in partnership with or working with, that you trust them fully. And I think an element of that has gone out of the non-league game, whereas it used to be a great trust between player and manager. And it's great to hear that someone like yourself that's got that experience and knowledge from other levels as well is bringing that back into the non-league game.
Yeah, I think that's gone from every level in the game. Like I said, the managers I played for, apart from one or two, which I'm not going to mention, I trusted my managers and I trusted them to their best interests at heart for me. One or two let me down, but listen, that's the way life is. But like I say to my players, listen, I'll always tell you the truth. I'll always tell you why you're dropped or why you're not playing or why you're not in the squad. And I say to them, I say, listen, there's only two reasons why you get bought off apart from being injured. One is tactical, or two, you're having a crap game. So now you decide what you want to, like, if you're going to come and ask me, then I'll tell you. And I remember one player come and said, why'd you take me off? I'm like, to be fair, you were crap. You were useless. You were centre forward. You ain't had a shot on goal in 75 minutes. I said, well, like, why would I keep playing you? And they go, oh, yeah, okay. And they accept that. But I'll always tell them the truth, always.
Yeah, no, I think it's broken. So, and just on, I suppose, just briefly on the top level of football now, Dixie, compared to when you played it, what's the big changes? I don't want to talk. Everybody talks about you and, you know, that you're hard tackling and the hard man stuff. I thought you had an ability, like you had a left foot that was unbelievable. And I feel you could have played for England more than once, never mind once. But what do you think the difference is now in the top level and compared to when you played it?
When I play, all my managers never told me how to play left back or what they wanted me to do or what. They never told me that. But now you have to tell players, because if you don't, they go, yeah, but you never told me. Listen, you, whether you're in a Premiership, Championship or non-league, listen, you're a left back. All I want you to do is to defend, and when you get the ball, pass it to your own player. Maybe get some crosses in the box, score some goals or whatever. You know, my managers never told me how to play football because it was coached into me from a young age. But now it's not. Like, for the academies, like I said, I watch them, like, obviously at West Ham when I was there, and I watched them at West Brom. They're not told how to play football. They're allowed to get away with so much. And the thing is, like, when I was growing up as an apprentice, cleaning boots, cleaning kit, cleaning the toilets. For me, it's a good upbringing, a very good upbringing, and it teaches you respect, and it teaches you that, hang on, one day, I remember Mark Dennis, Mad Mark, I loved him, but he was a pro.
That's great coming from you and all, by the way. Julian Dix called you mad, by the way. I know Mark. Well,
he was, for me, he was a fantastic footballer. But I always remember that I think he was on £600 a week at the time, and I'm going back probably 84, 85, and I'm thinking one day I want to get there. And it was. It's like I used to clean players' boots. I used to clean the toilets. You used to get them shower gel and shampoo and things like that. If you didn't, you get a smack across the head, and that would be it. And you would
and the old Christmas tip, Dixie, as well. Yeah. You know, you wanted to look after your pros, didn't you?
But the old tip. Little Frank Lampard used to clean my boots, and I'd give him 100 quid at Christmas. After that, they were shit. but it does. It gives you a good upbringing as an apprenticeship. And unfortunately, nowadays, a lot of clubs don't do that.
And you've already said about, you know, your passion for football, and Dave's mentioned it as well. But I was having a discussion with some non-league footballers that have made the move up to Premier League and played at that level the other week on another Zoom call. And one of the things that came up is that players or youngsters coming through now don't watch football. They don't, you know, whereas everybody would be out kicking the ball as much as they could when they were younger, it's almost, it takes too much out of them to watch a game, to absorb pattern of play. So sometimes when you're saying that the coaches aren't necessarily telling them, the coaches could probably tell them and they wouldn't know what they were talking about anyway.
No, maybe not, but I never watched football. When I was a kid, I never watched football. I remember watching one cup final, which was Man United and Arsenal. I remember watching that, but I never watched football. I don't watch football now. You know what I mean? As a player, I understand if you're a centre forward and they're asking you to come left back, I understand that you have to tell people what to do. But if that's your position, then you should know how to play that. All right, not if you're 7, 8, 9 years old, no, not a problem. But if you're 17, 18, 19, you should know how to play that. I mean, like nowadays, I was 17 when I made my debut. Yeah, you know I mean, I played number 10. I was an inside left. And I knew what I had to do. I knew how I had to play football to stay in the side.
Well, I love that. That's I'm going to use that. That's, you know, the bottom line is when they get to the level that we're at, Dixie, if you like, now, that it's a line you should, what are you asking me for? You should effectively know your job. Yeah, you know, do you not know it? Do you not understand the job? You know, well, I'll put it within a team structure, but you must know your job.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you're right. A lot of people hide behind, you know, and for me, and maybe it's dinosaur stuff because you get old, but I always remember when I first started, you know, in management, you went in the dressing room and people wouldn't even know you'd walked in the door. The place would be buzzing. Yeah. No music, just yak, 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 yak. And towards the end when I walked in, it'd be silence. It just they nearly tax each other in the dressing room. And at that time, when the senior players would do half of your job for you, players would go, hey, you, sort yourself out before the golfer gets in, type thing. And that's sort of been eroded away from the game. And there's nothing wrong with that. And people sort of go, well, it's a modern game and it's a high press and it's a da-da and it's 4-2-3-1 and all these nonsense. The game hasn't changed. People have tried to make it sound more than it is.
Mm-hmm. No, listen, I totally agree. Listen, for me, formations don't win games. Players win games. You know, I mean, I don't see how Guardiola will say to his players, right, well, you've got to do this or you've got to. They know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. And it's the same as the boys at Heybridge or like non-league. Listen, you know, if you're a left back, you know what you've got to do. If you don't, then you're not going to play. You know what I mean? Like sometimes you have to tell players, listen, I want you to run. Just when he gets the ball, bang, off you go. But you should only tell them once. Sometimes you're still shouting them on the pitch. I told you to run. Oh, yeah, all right, Gaffer. You know what I mean? But that's it. That's at every level.
Well, common sense. I know you've got a job to do as a manager at Heybridge, but maybe if you, there's a couple of football league boards or something that you probably, Dave's already spoken about common sense and intelligence that we need elsewhere in football. But Julian, always a pleasure to get you on. Thank you for your time. Best of luck in the new role. I'm sure we'll speak to you as the season progresses, as and when it does. But good luck.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Good luck. Thanks.
So that's it for this week. Thank you to all of our guests and for everybody for listening wherever you may be. Dave, we didn't even mention our choice of semi-finalists in the FA Trophy for last week's show and the celebrations that followed.
Yes, and obviously Hornchurch is the story of... Well, I was trying to work out, I had a couple of text messages from McBraid, who was nursing a sore head, as you can imagine, tell me about, you know, how he felt during the penalty kicks and that. And you'd have to say thoroughly deserve what they got. My big thing was, has a team from level three ever got to Wembley for the FA Trophy? Or when was the last time?
You're looking at me like I'm some sort of stato normally.
I know. I just thought it was magnificent, you know, magnificent. And to be fair to Hereford, delighted for Hereford, I have to say with a heavy heart because of Alan Dowson's a big friend of mine, but Steve came on and got the kiss of luck from us. But so brilliant at the finals between two teams that aren't off the top level. Brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. But for Colin McBraid and the people at Hornchurch, I'm sorry, Hereford, I love you, but I'll be wearing my Hornchurch scarf and hat, if that's okay. Steve Burr's going to chin me if he sees me in the after that, but I'm sure he'll understand. But yeah, and hopefully we're talking about, we might have a chance to be there press-wise, aren't we? But we'll see, mate, you know.
But it probably says a lot about the National League, doesn't it, that we've got two trophy finals coming up and actually... There isn't a club from the top flight of non-league in those finals because you've got one club that's now in the Football League because they got promoted and they've flown the nest.
Yeah.
And then you've got Concord from the south.
And again, you know, he's well, we know Anthony's like a big friend of the show, and again I'd love him to wow. For them to win it would be unbelievable, you know. I'm not sure I could live with them if they did, but you know what? How would that be, Concord and Hornchurch? You know, but we'll see.
Well, stranger things have happened in non-league, as we often say. Yeah, right. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Dave Anderson's there at DaveAnderson78. I'm there at Tim Fuel. You can find us every week on Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. We need to sort out these gaffer tapes, Dave. As gaffers now, they're out and about. They're out and about. We need to hunt them down.
We're going to get on it. Give us a couple of weeks. Once the pub's open, we're in.
And then we'll get the honesty. Stay alert, stay safe. Thank you and goodbye.
A Jibber Jabber production. JIBBA JABBA. Thank you.